1 Corinthians chapter 16 will set the stage for what we're going to discuss this morning. 1 Corinthians chapter 16. What I'd like to talk about tonight is, I guess you could call it a continuation of what we talked about this morning in regards to stewardship. Wanted to discuss generally what stewardship is and what our responsibilities are in stewardship. And tonight what we want to talk a little bit about is more specifically in stewardship, financial stewardship and giving back to God. And what we will not be doing is telling you how much to give or a percentage or delving too much into any of that. We will not be covering that, but rather we're going to talk about how giving connects us to God. How do we connect to God through giving? But first, let's set the stage here in 1 Corinthians chapter 16 with the command, beginning in verse 1. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so you also are to do. On the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up, as he may prosper, so that there will be no collecting when I come. And I believe that we've already done this morning. We partook in that, and we gave of our means, and I believe that we'll probably have the opportunity to do that again this evening. But what I want to talk about specifically tonight is, what is it that giving does for us? What does giving do? You know, every act of worship, there's a certain aspect of it that there's something that as it relates to God and us. And I think so often, because giving of money and dealing with money and finances is such a common thing for us, that sometimes we lose sight of the relationship that giving has to God. And I think that's something that we shouldn't lose sight of. And that's what we want to talk about tonight. First, I believe that giving establishes our humility before God. Giving establishes our humility before God. And this is something that I believe the world misses. Have you ever been anywhere like a charity auction? Maybe a dinner that is supporting some sort of nonprofit or some sort of event, and maybe they're recognizing people who are giving. You know, I went to one of the first dinners I ever went to like that as a part of my job. I caught myself halfway through thinking, is this for the people who are receiving the money, who need the money? Or is this sort of, you know, an event for all of these people who are giving money to sort of pat themselves on the back? And I think the world sort of has that attitude about giving, that it's sort of for them. And in fact, the United States tax code even gives them the benefit of that, that there's a tax break for giving money. And that sort of takes the good nature out of it, that you're doing it for your fellow man. You're doing it to help somebody. That so many people give because it does something for them. They're giving for their benefit. And I think if that's our attitude about giving, then that's certainly not the plan, the layout that we have in the Bible, that God, his expectations of us. You know, there's a certain superiority to that sort of concept of charitable giving, of giving for a tax break. Because the benefactors are put on the pedestal. The people who are giving the money, they are sort of slapped on the back. They're congratulated. They're given the awards. Meanwhile, the people that they are giving the money to, they might feel small. And the focus is on the exact wrong person. The focus should be on the people who are receiving it. First of all, I believe that giving is about me expressing to God that he's my superior. We read this morning and referenced it several times, Psalm 24, in reference to God creating the world. Everything that's in the world is his. He made it. He made you and I. And what we talked about this morning is the proper understanding and the differentiation between stewardship and ownership. That we are merely stewards of the things that God has given us. He is the true owner, and by giving back to him, that establishes my humility, because what I'm saying is, you're superior to me. I understand rightly the relationship that you and I have. You are the great creator of the universe, and I'm just a man. And I recognize that by giving back to you what you have already given to me. Let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 26. This is an attitude that's on display here. Deuteronomy chapter 26. Verse beginning in verse 8. And the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with great deeds of terror, with signs and wonders. And He brought us into this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And behold, now I bring the first of the fruit of the ground, which you, O Lord, have given me. And you shall set it down before the Lord your God and worship before the Lord your God. You see, the Israelites realized, at least in this instance, that they didn't do anything to deserve that. The land of Canaan that God gave them. They walked into fields that had already been sown, homes that had already been built, and they reaped the rewards of that. And here we see in Deuteronomy chapter 26 that they recognized that God had given those things to them because He was the owner. And to recognize the relationship between God and themselves, they decided that they needed to give some back to Him. You remember Ananias and Sapphira over in Acts chapter 5? Ananias and Sapphira were a husband and wife. We really had the wrong perspective about giving. We talked or made reference to Acts chapter 4 this morning. And the foundation of the church. It made reference to the fact that in Acts chapter 4, that it says that there was not a needy one among them. And that was because of people selling what they had and using it to distribute to their brothers and sisters so that they could have the things that they needed. And Ananias and Sapphira sort of did that. At least thought that they were doing that. But let's pick up here in verse 1 of Acts chapter 5. But a man named Ananias, with his wife Sapphira, sold a piece of property, and with his wife's knowledge, he kept back for himself some of the proceeds, and brought only a part of it, and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to keep back for yourself part of the proceeds of the land? While it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not at your disposal? Why is it then you have contrived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. When Ananias heard these words, he fell down and breathed his last. And great fear came upon all who heard it. The young men rose and wrapped him up and carried him out and buried him. After an interval of about 3 hours, his wife came in, not knowing what had happened. And Peter said to her, "Tell me whether you sold the land for so much." And she said, "Yes, for so much." But Peter said to her, "How is it that you have agreed together to test the Spirit of the Lord? Behold, the feet of those who have buried your husband are at the door, and they will carry you out." Immediately she fell down at his feet and breathed her last. When the young men came in, they found her dead, and they carried her out and buried her beside her husband. And great fear came upon the whole church and upon all who heard these things. See, Ananias and Sapphira wished to give to support those who didn't have enough. But what they really wanted more than to fulfill an obligation to help their brothers and sisters is they wanted recognition. They wanted people to see them giving a great amount. And so they came up with the plan that they would sell a piece of land, let everyone assume, tell everyone that they had given the whole amount, but they would keep back some of it. You see, that was the best of both worlds for Ananias and Sapphira. They got the praise of men for doing such a kind act for their brothers and sisters, yet they also got to keep back a portion of that for themselves. This was not humility that they were displaying. This was greed. It was greed. They wanted to keep the money. And also it was the desire to please men rather than God. And we see how God handles that. He strikes both of them down. What's interesting is He doesn't punish them because of the amount that they gave. Peter even says, while that land was in your possession, you could have done with it what you wanted. Even after you had sold it, was that money not in your control? What he's trying to get across with them was, you're not being punished because of how much you gave, but rather the attitude by which you gave. It was one seeking the praise of men rather than the humility to give back to your brothers and sisters based upon what God had given to you. On a human level, giving doesn't elevate us over others either. as I made reference to people who give for tax breaks, for the benefit of others, seeing them do it, that is not why we give. We spoke earlier this morning about not being haughty. Those who have been bestowed more financially than others, they were commanded there not to be haughty, but to keep their minds, their thoughts on God. And we have to keep that in mind as we give. We don't need to do it to be haughty, to be seen of men as Ananias and Sapphira did, but rather it's a demonstration of our humility towards God. What we're simply saying is, you've given this to me. I recognize that this is your ownership. You own this. I'm merely a steward and wish to give it back to you. We can even see in Matthew chapter 6, verse 1 through 4, where Jesus is demonstrating, he says, the people who give to be seen of men will have their just reward. If we seek to make men happy, to do it to be pleased with men, then ultimately that's what we'll get. Men will be pleased with us, but God will not. Secondly, giving is worship. I don't know if you've ever thought of giving as worship. I know for a long time I didn't. I thought it was just sort of something that we did in the middle of services, something that we had to do to keep the church lights on. And I didn't think of that as an act of worship. I thought of just fulfilling some sort of obligation that I had. Write my check and give it because that's what I was supposed to do. But when we worship, what we're doing is we're acknowledging our relationship with God. I looked up the definition of worship, and this is the definition. To depress, to bow down, to crouch, to fall flat, to stoop. What we're doing when we give back to God is we're recognizing Him as the Almighty. We're recognizing Him as the Creator, the Owner. We're bowing before Him. We're stooping. We're acknowledging the relationship between us and Him. We're very small. We live to worship Him. And one way that we do that is by fulfilling His command to give back to Him because He's commanded it. And you know, sometimes when we give, we tend to think of that gift as big. I think that's a big gift because it's a sacrifice to us, and it might be big. But to God, it's big only because it acknowledges His infinite ownership of everything that He's created. You see, by giving back to Him, we recognize that it was ours, or rather it was not ours, to begin with. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3 and in verse 9. Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. Now, most of us here today are probably not farmers. We don't have any crops to give back to Him. But what do we do? Well, most of us work. Most of us receive a paycheck. We give back to Him because of what was mentioned in Deuteronomy chapter 8. You know, sometimes it's very easy for us to get on our high horse. We talked about this morning about when we work, we feel like we've earned something. We deserve it. That's our money. Deuteronomy chapter 8 says, where did you get that ability to work? Who gave that to you? You know, when our focus is on God, we realize these sorts of things. It keeps us in line so that we realize we owe God. Yes, maybe it is our money. Maybe we did work hard for it. But ultimately, who's responsible for that? When we honor, we glorify God by giving Him back what He gave us. You see, financial giving, it trains our hearts, another crucial part of our relationship with God. Do we trust God? You know, when we give away something, that means that we have less of that thing. Particularly money. When we give it away, that is one more dollar that I don't have to spend. And I might have planned to spend it on something good. You see, giving expresses our trust in God. More than a lot of things, I think, giving expresses our trust in God. When we give up something, particularly money, what we're saying is, God, I trust that you'll take care of me. You know, sometimes we think that we know what's best for us. In fact, a lot of times we think we know what's best for us. We think we know how to spend our own money. We think that we have a plan about how we're going to spend our money, we're going to take care of ourselves. And when God asks and expects for us to give some of that back to him, that interrupts our plans a little bit. That means that we're going to have to depend on God to take care of us. Turn over to Malachi chapter 3. We looked at this passage also this morning. Malachi chapter 3. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 10. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord God Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you will not have room enough for it. See, giving is really about trusting God. Do we trust God enough to let those few dollars out of our hands? Because what does money represent to us? Freedom. Money gives us to do the things that we want to do. It allows us the freedom to take care of ourselves, to do the things that we think that we need. But all too often, the things that we think we need are not the things that God knows we need. And our trust is furthered when we release some of that to him because we leave it up to God to take care of us. Turn over to 1 Kings chapter 17. 1 Kings chapter 17. Beginning in verse 8. Then the word of the Lord came to him, Arise, go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow there to feed you. So he arose and went to Zarephath, and when he came to the gate of the city, behold, a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, Bring me a little water in a vessel that I may drink. And as she was going to bring it, he called to her and said, Bring me a morsel of bread in your hand. She said, As the Lord your God lives, I have nothing baked, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little oil in a jug. And now I am gathering a couple of sticks that I may go in and prepare it for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die. And Elijah said to her, Do not fear. Go and do as you have said, but first make me a little cake of it and bring it to me, and afterward make something for yourself and your son. For thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, The jar of flour shall not be spent, and the jug of oil shall not be empty, until the day the Lord sends rain upon the earth. And she went and did as Elijah said, and she and her household ate for many days. The jar of flour was not spent, neither did the jug of oil become empty, according to the word of the Lord that he spoke by Elijah. Now put yourself in this woman's position. She had hardly any food. Just enough for one last meal. And she's preparing to prepare that last meal for her and her son and die. She has enough for one last meal and then nothing else. And Elijah comes. Not only does he ask her for water, but he asks for a little cake. And I don't know about you, but I could imagine what's going on in this woman's mind. Why in the world would you ask me that? Don't you know, I barely have enough to feed myself. And so she says, I only have this little bit left in this jar. Just enough for me and my son. I'm sure she's thinking, I just want to enjoy one last thing before I die. One last morsel of food. One last moment of peace. And he tells her, do it anyway. The Lord will take care of you. And sure enough, we see the rest of the story that she goes in and she prepares that cake for him. And it says that those jars never ran out. And she was able to enjoy the food because the Lord took care of her. What an amazing amount of trust this woman displayed in this story. She was literally at death's door with one last meal. Most of us will probably never get to that point. We'll never get to the point where we only have enough food for one last meal and then we'll die. Yet this woman faced death and had enough faith in God to give away the very last meal that she had. Do we display that kind of faith? Do we display that kind of faith specifically in regards to giving, to our finances? Or do we look and go, well, I don't know. I don't know if I'll be able to go on that vacation I had planned if I give this week. I had been planning on taking my wife out for a fancy dinner this weekend, and if I give, I don't know if I'll have enough money to give to the Lord. You see, what we've done is we've lost perspective. What we're doing is taking care of ourselves first before we fulfill our command to God. Remember what it said about the Macedonians in 2 Corinthians chapter 8? The secret to their success? It said they were in extreme poverty, going through much affliction, and that they gave beyond their measure. Why? They'd given themselves to the Lord first. We're giving into ourselves when we think like that. I can't give this week, or I won't be able to do this. You're showing no trust in God to take care of you. We see a similar story in Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12. Beginning in verse 41. And he sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums, and a poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which make a penny. And he called his disciples to him and said to them, truly I say to you, the poor widow has put in more than all of those who are contributing in the offering box. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on. Now here's another example where Jesus displays and says that it doesn't matter how much you give. That's not what we're graded on. That's not what God looks for. He's not looking for a check with a lot of zeros on it. What he's looking for is, he's looking for your heart. God wants your heart, not your money. Yes, that's a command. We have a command to lay by in store, to take as we have prospered and give back to the Lord. As stewards, that's our responsibility. That's not God's ultimate goal. He doesn't want the money. He can't use the money. The money's nothing to him. This is, after all, our God of the universe we're talking about. What he's looking for is, he's looking for our heart. He's looking for us to give all of him. And this woman who gave two small copper coins, we would think of that as an insignificant amount. But it probably didn't matter whether she gave that or not. It didn't have very much impact on the bottom line. Yet God, Jesus, takes that moment after that woman gives to call the disciples together. It's not after the many rich people put in large sums that Jesus saw. He doesn't stop the apostles to pull them aside and teach them a lesson and go, you see these rich people, look at how much they're giving. That's how you give. No. It's this woman who probably the apostles may not have even noticed. But Jesus noticed. Because Jesus sees the intentions of the heart. You know, this could have very well been everything that she had. She's got no more money. She can't eat. She can't take care of herself. It would have been very easy for her to say, I can't afford to give right now. How am I supposed to eat? How am I supposed to take care of myself? Lord, when I get a little more money, I'll give. That's not the attitude you have. You said, Lord, you have my heart. I trust you. I trust you enough to give you all that I have. Because I know that you'll take care of me. I know that you can choose to take care of me in this life. And if I die, I know that you'll take care of me in the life after. There's some lessons that we can get from this very insignificant amount that this woman gives. One, never too poor to give. We're very good about making excuses. Extremely good about making excuses. Well, this is coming up and this is a good thing. Or, you know, something came up and we just don't have it right now. Well, I think God would probably want me to use this for this good thing. How do you justify that? When we have this example, we've got the Macedonians in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 who said that they were in extreme poverty and still gave beyond what they were able. How can we ever think that we're too poor to give? Secondly, when we give generously, it means trusting in God for the future. When we give so much that it hurts. What we're doing is we're saying, God, I trust you. I trust that you'll take care of me. And I trust that you'll take care of me in the way that you see fit. Because sometimes the way that we think we need to be taken care of exceeds, is different than the way that God sees that we need to be taken care of. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 8, food and clothes. Food and clothes. Who here wouldn't have food and clothes if they gave a little more? If they gave with the attitude that this woman had, to give so much until it hurts. Finally, giving's worship that expresses our relationship to God. When we give, it expresses to God that we understand the relationship that we have with Him. It's so easy for us to lose focus on God, to feel that we're more important, to feel that we're accomplishing more than we are, to feel that we're accomplishing those things on our own, to lose track of who's in control, who's given us the abilities to do the things that we do. It's easy to lose track of that. And giving back to God is one way that brings our hearts and minds back centered. It allows us to focus on the things that are important. It allows us to put our trust back into the hands of God and say, God, I'm giving to you back what you've given to me. It's yours. I recognize you as the Creator. I trust that you'll take care of me either now or in the life hereafter. You know, when I was about to get married, I'll share a personal story. When I was getting married, we didn't have very much money at all. Looking back on it, I don't know what business we had getting married. We had such little money. And I remember telling my wife, I guess it was right after either we got engaged or right after we got married, I said, what in the world were we thinking? You know, luckily, I got a new job, I got a promotion, and I remember going, "What? There's no way that we could have made it on that amount of money." And I remember a particular story or a particular moment when we were getting married and we were looking for a place to stay. There was a place that we found that we thought was great, that would have been fantastic for us. We went and talked to them and they said, okay, well, you got to put X amount of dollars down to hold it and for the deposit. And I was like, man, that is a lot of money. We don't have that. And then remember we talked about it and I said, you know, look, we'll be okay. I know that was where we wanted to live, but we'll find somewhere else and God will take care of us. We'll be okay if we don't have this apartment. You know, the very next day, We got a card in the mail from a family member who couldn't attend the wedding. Sent their wedding present and gave us some money. Now, I don't want you to confuse what I'm saying here. I'm not saying that God always gives you what you want. And if you want it and you pray to him, he's going to send you a check in the mail. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that God takes care of his people. You know, there were times when we thought that we might not make it. And there was so little money. You know, and it's hard to focus on God in those kind of moments sometimes. What we've got to understand is that we have to display our trust in God. Part of that is giving back to him what he's given to us. I hope that's been beneficial for you. There's just so much in the Bible that talks about stewardship and money, and it's an uncomfortable topic a lot of times. It's not something that's very fun to talk about. But the Lord talks about it for a reason. There's a lot of lessons that we can learn by using those things that he talks about in relation to money and stewardship. And I think that we're better off when we study those things. I hope that you found that useful. If you're sitting in this audience tonight and you've not made the decision to trust in God, to give your life to him, I hope that as we sing this song in just a few moments, that you would consider the state of your soul. If you've not given your life to God, you're lost. You're lost. I have a great hope that I will see all of you in heaven one day. If you've not given your life to God through baptism, you don't have that hope. You don't have the hope that I have. And I want that for you. I want that for you more than anything. As we sing this song, please think about the state of your soul. If we can do anything for you, please come now as we stand and sing.